Hello and welcome to the Untitled Car Show.
I'm your host, Ike. Today you join me. I am out in my garage working on the Pontiac Fiero project. So I want to go over a bit about what's going on and all that, and then we'll talk about other stuff, if that makes any sense. So, first and foremost, I'll let you know what I'm doing on the Fiero and kind of why I'm working on the Fiero. So let's actually start from the start. So the Fiero, the reason I got it is it's $400 to start. So it's the cheapest mid-engine car in the world, or at least in the United States. I mean, you really can't find a MR2 for that amount of money, you know, that's anywhere near complete. You can't really find much of anything for that amount of money. It sounds like, just random aside, it sounds like a rainstorm's about to come in, but it's not. I don't know what the hell that was. So, yeah, so you really can't get anything into performance. I mean, you'd be hard for us to find any performance car in that range. Let's talk about Mustang, or, you know, Camaro, stuff like that. I mean, if you're looking at a Camaro or a Mustang or something in that, like, bare bones, like, this is how much it costs to have a performance car sort of thing, or bare budget performance cars, I think you really can't find something cheaper than this Fiero. So, I mean, prove me wrong, Internet. Yeah, there's fireworks because it's July and people need to shoot off fucking fireworks. So I apologize if that comes through on the mic. But when it comes to, like, why the Fiero project, I mean, what else are you going to get for $400 that is a performance-minded vehicle? Now, I have received a lot of guff about, well, the Fiero, you know, it was underpowered, and it doesn't really meet officer expectations, and is really an enthusiast car, and blah, blah, blah. So here's where I fall on this whole thing. Obviously, I think it is an enthusiast car, otherwise I would not own it, and I would not be making such a claim. I think where a lot of people fall short is they go, well, it's only 150 horsepower on a good day from the V6, which, you know, yeah, that's not great. But let's talk about cars in, you know, the momentum category. So you have cars that, you know, like the Mazda Miata or, you know, even a competitor from the same era from a Mustang. I mean, are you really getting that much more horsepower from a V8 Mustang? I mean, you're talking from 1985, you're talking about maybe 200-ish horsepower. If you're lucky. Now, there's a lot more tuning that can be done to that, and, you know, that it does make a difference, and I will say that does make a difference, but you're also having to do a lot of tuning and all that to the vehicle. Now, these things have such an easy cradle to pull out the motor and put something in that a lot of people will just go ahead and do that as opposed to even bothering with a, so that does limit the aftermarket support business. So there's a lot less aftermarket tuning available. So a lot of it's just take out the motor, put something else in. Which is not what I want to do. It's more about, you know, making what's there work. So excuse me, I apologize about that. So if that doesn't come across on the audio, I'm using a new mic, so let me know how that is working out for everyone. But the, I mean, serious competitors. I'm going to try and do this on a
podcast with the Q&A thing. But let's talk serious competitors to this car. So if you've got something else that you think is a better vehicle for less money, I want to hear about it, and I want you to put it on my Twitter. So that's at Untitled Car Show. So the obvious stuff, let's kind of go with that. So Mustangs, Camaros, like I said before, they're all 200 horsepower from the same year. And if you're looking at getting something that's under $1,000, you're looking at a total basket case. You're trying to, you know, put together someone else's mistake at that point is what it basically comes down to. So someone else went out, blew a bunch of money on the car, and they're trying to, you know, get you to, like I said, pay for their mistake. So that's the right size. Just got to get the right enough for that. So that's those cars. You go, well, import stuff. Well, let's look at the import stuff. So I would say the next closest competitor to this would be an old Celica from Toyota. So, like, when they were rear-wheel drive, or kind of like the Celica Supra is what they were called back then, like that generation. So similar vintage, mid-80s, Supra is the vehicle I'm thinking of. I think it was just called the Supra here in the States. And I think that's a good car. I think that you can find those things in good shape for under $1,000. But on those, they have notorious head gasket issues and head bolt failure issues. So I think what you end up with is, you know, a decent car, but you got to be willing to, you know, hop right into that thing and fix the glaring issue with it right away. Now, that's not a bad thing. You know, obviously, when I bought this thing, it was $400 and needed work. But the other thing, too, is on those Supras, because they were, you know, mostly sold with automatic transmissions, like, it's super hard to find with a manual transmission. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying you're going to be paying a little bit of a premium for it. And again, the aftermarket support, because of what those vehicles are, not great. So you're looking at, you know, you buy a $1,000 car, but you're going to have to be doing a lot of the work to that thing yourself. Which again, not an awful thing. Not a telling you to run and hide from something where you got to do the work on it yourself. I would say that that's kind of the point of what I'm doing. I think that's probably the closest competitor, because it really, everything else really doesn't make much sense in terms of competing with this thing. So, but even still, like head gasket issues, and yeah, it's a Supra. It has a appeal to it, you know, just because of the name, I would say, but it's one of those things where those cars, I like them. They're a 2+2. They're fun. They're not a great joy to drive, and I said the aftermarket support just isn't there, just like it isn't there for this car. So Supra, classic Supra, yeah, it's a great car in terms of you can get them for $1,000 and you're not paying out the nose to you know, get your hands on something kind of fun in the 80s. Like I said, I think that's the next closest supporter. But, again, you know, something goes bad on that car, the support. I'm talking about, like, they built and sold hundreds of thousands of Fieros in the United States. And, like, the local junkyard close to me has Fieros in there, not frequently, but frequently enough that you can, you know, get a part if you need a part, or if you need, you know, like a headlight motor or something like that blows out on it,
you can go out and you can find it on eBay for not too much money, where you really can't say the same of that for the Celica Supras or whatever the hell they're called here in the States. So that's kind of why I don't think those are a great car. Now, I have seen a lot of, you know, what I was really looking for was an RX-7, but trying to find an RX-7 under $1,000 means you are going out and you are finding, apparently in this area, a Ford 302 motored RX-7, which is not what I want, at least. I want a proper rotary engine, and I want it to be, you know, mostly, not original, but, you know, I don't want to be inheriting someone else's problem. You know, well, I put a Ford 302 in it, and, I mean, if that's your jam, then that's your jam. Or I'm trying to put an LS into it, but I goofed up, and I'm trying to figure out how to unfuck myself, and my wife is pissed at me. I got a lot of those, like, well, I need to sell this because the wife's angry, and I can't get it done because I got the kids, and blah, blah, blah. Which, yeah, that sucks. But, you know, also not my fault, so I'm not going to go out of my way to help out someone dump their piece of crap. So, you know, you can't find an RX-7 for this money. You can't find, you know, anything that's got a passion for it. And what I think, too, about these cars is if you look at, there's a, Haggerty does a great website thing where you kind of follow cars like stock market. So if you got something collectible or you're thinking about picking up something collectible and you're like, well, I wonder how much this has cost and what the trend is and blah, blah, blah. If you go to Haggerty's site, you got to sign up, which is the part that irritates me. I hate having to sign up for 800 different websites just to use, you know, like, well, I want to use one tool on your site one time, but now I'm on your mailing list forever, which is obnoxious, but whatever. So I'm trying to figure out how I managed to do. I got four different size bolts going into the same hole on the opposite side, so that doesn't make much sense, but again, Fiero. Well, as I say, oh yeah, so you go to Haggerty's site and you pull up this tracker and it'll kind of tell you what the value of these cars are. And Fieros have actually decreased in value over the recent years. Which you go, well, that's not a great sign, Ike. Like, why would you want something that's going to decrease in value? Well, the non-concourse versions of the car have decreased in value. So everything that's not, you know, this is numbers matching and blah, 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 that's what's really gone down in value. The stuff that's mostly original has actually gone up in value and quite significantly in recent years. So right now I'm messing with the little heat extractor vents that are on the back. I gave them a nice touch of paint. And they, to be honest, I think they look gorgeous now. But the mostly original examples of these cars, you know, stuff that's in really great detailed shape has basically doubled in the past couple of months. So, like, basically 6 months is the lowest amount of time to let you see on the website. So, you think about it, 6 months, you got your super pristine examples shooting up in value. The rest of the examples have to follow along. So, because of that, I think this is a good time if you're thinking about going out and buying something as an investment. I think this would be a good time for that. To get a Fiero in particular, because it is such a, you know, the top-of-the-line versions of the car have gone up in value super fast. Right now I'm checking this clutch fork thing, seeing if it's slipping, because these are apparently an issue with these cars.
So I do think that these things are going to go up in value fairly quickly over the next few months. So I think if you're trying to, you know, get something as an investment, it's not a bad thing to grab. It's kind of what we like here. You know, it's low horsepower, momentum car, mid-engine, so it's got a good weight balance. These things are a little hairy under spirited driving. They do like to have the back end step out on you. But, you know, the fun of it is trying to tame it. So, when it comes to,
you know, is it worth it to pick up one of these things? You know, I say, yeah. You know, again, it's a momentum car. It's fun to drive.
Sorry, I'm getting distracted by all sorts of little tubes, just trying to trace around and make sure they're all going where they're supposed to go. I'll kind of tell you what's going on with that here in a second. But it's a two-seater, so not terribly practical, but it's got a big trunk. It's got a big trunk. It's got big, you know, big-ish front storage container. I could probably pack for a week and put it into this back end, but I also travel extremely light. You know, I think it's a good, you know, I'm thinking about getting into building a project car, because it is a simple-ish car. It uses a lot of GM components that are in a ton of cars, so, you know, you don't need to worry too much about, well, can I find parts for it? Because they should be available no matter what. It's not, you know, brand new technology, so you don't really have to deal with the pain in the ass that is OBD2 or... I have locked it. Hood hinge without even. No, there we go. Technology and trying to get all that to work the way it's supposed to work. This is a thing where you can very much buy it. There's OBD1. It's super simple to figure out how to use it. You know, there's little jumper wires. It's simple enough for anyone to really know what the hell they're doing to figure it out and do it. And if you, you know, need to learn something, there's a big enough aftermarket community out there that you can just go out, pick up a Hayes manual or just put it into Google. And, you know, a lot of the stuff is unfortunately now... a lot of dead sites, but the links are still good, so you can go out and go, okay, I need to learn X, Y, or Z, and it's out there and it's still available, and there's a good knowledge base, so you kind of have that going for you. The biggest issue I see with this car is, you know, in terms of why you maybe might not want to get one if you're thinking about getting it to kind of be a little project car, fun car, is there is a stigma against it. You know, found out that apparently it's a new show called How I Met Your Mother, which was apparently fairly popular, and they made fun of the vehicle there. But when it comes to, you know, other people in my generation, the millennial generation, which, got so much problems, you know, they're not buying houses. It's causing an issue for baby boomers retirement. Blah, 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 blah. That's super nitpicking reasons to hate kids, but whatever. I misplaced some bolts. Well, there's one. Stuff likes to walk away from me, and I'm not good about keeping it where it needs to go. But when it comes to baby boomers, or not baby boomers, when it comes to non-baby boomers, you know, millennials, the younger generation, there's really not that much knowledge about what this car is. Like, you can't really find someone on the street and be like, hey, what car is this? And they'll know off the top of their head. So if you're concerned about, like, the stigma or whatever, it's very easy to just, you know, take the badge off. And then it very much becomes a, well, what the hell is that car? So there is, you know, if you're afraid of the stigma, you don't have to be. It's all good. You know, you can drive it around and feel fine. You don't have to be afraid. I hope I'm putting this on the right way. Yeah, okay. That should be the first thing that comes across your head, Dan. Yeah, so it's simple enough to, you know, kind of rationalize it, which I guess is what I'm doing to y'all. But it's, it's a fun car. It's something that's going to go up in value. I mean, it really has hit the rock bottom. There's not really much else there for this to go down. And this is not a car you have to be concerned about. You know, let's say you got a missus who doesn't really understand the car hobby. But you really want to get into it. You know, let's say, like me at the beginning of it. So I probably got into the car, you know, fixing, modifying, whatever the hell you want to call it, scene, you know, early 20s. And by the time I could afford to have a project car, it was probably, I'd say I was probably about 25. So if you're 25-year-old and you're thinking, I need a car, you know, I wouldn't really rationalize too, speaking of this. So I wouldn't recommend trying to get into this scene. You know, single man might be hard to rationalize if you don't have a house. If you got a house, you know, get the house first, then get into the modifying cars. So, and if you can't do that, if a house is too expensive or whatever, I think this is a good point too, because it's $400, and if this is something where you're gonna maybe, have to sell the house, sell the car to afford a down payment on the house, this is not something you're going to take a huge loss on. So, I mean, buy a $400 car, you work on it, you have fun with it, and then, you know, if it comes time to sell, well, you can sell it, and it'll sell probably for right around what you bought it for, and you had fun with it, and basically got a hobby that cost you whatever it cost you in gas and insurance, and you're able to make up your principal investment right away. So, and maybe a little bit more depending on what the market does. So, you know, I think it's a good car for that. I think it's a very rational expenditure. And I realize this kind of sounds like I'm trying to rationalize it to myself. No, it makes sense. It's perfectly fine. You know, what you did. You know, you went out and bought this car. That's great. It's the most rational thing you could have done. Why not? Well, you know, if you talk to my missus again, she will tell you, you know, hey, I'm glad the Volvo is gone. Because that didn't move at all, and this actually moves. So there's that aspect of it. But there's also, you know, you buy the car, and I totally lost my train of thought in that one. But no, there's, you're buying something at this cost, at this value level. You gotta expect damage, you gotta expect defects and all that. And if you're really trying to find, again, when it comes back to, I get this over $1,000, let's say $1,000 Camaro. I think that's a good comparison place, because this is a GM car, that's a GM car. They got a lot of the same things with it. Well, first of all,
$1,000 Camaro, you're probably looking at V6 and maybe manual. Many more were sold as automatics, but you can make the same argument for this car. So, you know, you're looking at, I hope that didn't just goof up the recording, you're looking at, you know, similar repair costs, similar kind of stigma-ish, I guess. Like, well, you got a V6 Camaro. Like, no one should buy a V6 Camaro because no one wants a V6 Camaro, blah, blah, blah. The difference is, like, how you're going to have to put up with the bullshit. So you buy this, like I said. It's just kind of like, well, isn't that the car from How I Met Your Mother, which I just found out is a thing? Or is that the, I haven't had many negative issues. What I've got a lot of is like, oh, my brother used to have a Fiero, or so-and-so used to have a Fiero down the street from me, and da-da-da-da. Which, again, is all fine and well, but it is kind of annoying, too, when you have to deal with those people. Like, well, let me sit and spin you a yarn for the next 87 hours. Like, thanks for the compliments on the car, but I do actually have some places I need to go and some things I need to do. But, again, so comparing this to, so you've got similar cost of ownership. You got a similar kind of... You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that most of the people who are going to stop you and converse to you about a, you know, mid-80s-ish Camaro are going to have generally positive things to say, would be my guess. I can't imagine too many people would, you know, maybe your friends want to talk shit to you, because that's what I do with my friends, is we talk to about each other's fault. Which again, you know, you want to talk about maybe it's deserved, maybe it's not deserved, like is that good for the car community? I think that there's a very good, you know, shit talking I think is an inherently male aspect, and I know I'm typically very like, well, men and women, they all belong in the car hobby. I think men specifically, you know, the way at least I interact with all my male friends is a lot of shit talking, a lot of making fun of each other's, you know, likes, dislikes, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's all with love, and I think it's a good thing. I do think that there's, you know, things to tease on both sides of it and all that. But where did Mike? I went off on a really random tangent there. So bring it back. Anyway, similar cost to repair, similar cost to run. You might have slightly more options in terms of junkyards when it comes to like V6 Camaros, which I really haven't explored that aspect of it. That's going to be interesting. I should do that. But when it comes to turn around and do resaleability, you know, no one's a diehard for V6 Camaro. I can guarantee, you know, maybe 40 years from now, if you have a V6 Camaro, it's all mint, it's original, you kept it in good shape, it'll probably be worth some money. Same thing with like the old straight six Mustang. So if you have a good straight six Mustang from back in the day and it's in decent shape, it's probably worth a good chunk of change, right? Like, not what a V8 would be worth, because everyone wants the V8, but probably enough to make you happy that you kept that thing original. But if you drop a V8 in it, you might have gotten more money for it back in the day, but not. There's this car, until they release the Camaro, or the Corvette that they keep saying they're going to release with the mid-engine, is the only mid-engine American car by a major manufacturer. And because of that, it does have a little bit of history to it, and that history, you know, does help with collectability. And I think, especially if GM does come out with a mid-engine Corvette
in the next couple of years, I think you'll see a interest in these things kind of relaunching, because all the sites, you know, are going to be talking about, you know, America's first mid-engine car since the Pontiac Fiero. And remember that thing? And remember how much of a pain that was? And blah, blah, blah. So people are going to go like, well, if it was the car that preceded this car, how bad can it be? So, you know, and I think anytime you have anything historic, there is a attraction to it. I mean, that's part of the reason I like it, is because it is, so far, the only mid-engine American car from the major manufacturer. So, back home this week, I got a couple of arguments from my brother. Oh, well, actually, you know, the Hennessy Venom is a, you know, American-made mid-engine car, or the, you know, Ford, actually, he did point out this one. He went, well, the Ford GT is a mid-engine car from an American manufacturer. Yeah, and I guess that is true. I always forget about that one. But is it really an American car, though? Because it's, it wasn't built here. The original one, the old GT40. Now, the 05 cars, you know, that generation is newest generation. I don't know where the newest generation is built, but I do know the 05s were mostly built in the United States, to my understanding. So I will, you know, accept defeat on that one. But can you afford a Ford GT? No. And if the next cheapest option is Pontiac Fiero, well, that means this is the second most expensive American-made mid-engine car. So, it's an interesting experiment. So, again, back to the point, though. So, when you're thinking about getting, you know, a Camaro, something goes wrong on a Camaro, like I said, you might be able to go to a junkyard, grab a part, just like you might be able to do it here with a Fiero. So, you know, there is cross-share between platforms and years and all that stuff. So you've got a good aftermarket base for both vehicles. The issue is, at the end of the day, with a Camaro, sub-$1,000, you'll be kind of left going like, well, I need to do a, you know, V8 swap. Like, that's what it comes down to if you want to do, if you want respect for those things. And you're still left with kind of a trashy car, you know, white trashy, take it or leave it with that expression, but you know, you're dealing with a car that has a reputation. And it looks, the Camaro, the Mustang, they look like old cars. Like, there's no escaping that. Like, this is a car that's kind of 10 years past its prime and its life. It's not really ideal for, I gotta back this bolt out. It's not really great for, you know, like, well, I bought this car because of, you know, it was cheap. I mean, that's a car that kind of announces that it's cheap muscle. The, you know, I'm sitting here going like, well, you're just shitting on older cars. And that's not what I mean to do. So let's kind of talk about advantages the Fiero has over other cars, you know, in this $1,000 price bracket. So, and I'm sticking to this, like, air budget talk here. I'm talking about, like, you're going to your local Craigslist, your Facebook Marketplace, which, by the way, is awesome. I've recently discovered it. I love it. You know, that's how I found parts for this. That's how I sold a bunch of parts from the Porsche 924. You know, it's a great, if you haven't used it, I highly recommend it, especially for selling stuff, because, you know, people get on Facebook and they're browsing on there all day, and they will find your shit and they will buy your shit. So, highly recommend. Anywho, just sorting through the washers at the moment and trying to find the right one. When it comes to, you know, what this car has, it has fiberglass body panels, like a Saturn. And that means that you don't have to worry about rust on the outside of the car. They have a little bit of flex and a little bit of give, so that means that, you know, when you're having to do repairs or if you're doing body work for the first time, this is a car that you can try the body work on yourself because it's basically made out of Bondo. And you don't have to worry too much about effing it all up. Because if you eff it all up, you can sand it down and try again. It's also a car that really you can take and make into whatever the hell you want it to be. So if you want to keep this thing original, you want to say, hey, this is a car that I want it to look like it rolled out of the factory. You know, you can go out, you can find those parts, you can find those pieces, and you can do that with this car. It's not a car you have to worry about, you know, really not having options for a body kit or a, you know, performance upgrade or, you know, you can take it and make it any order. If you want a V8 mid-engine car, you want it to look like a Ferrari, you can do that. You want a four-banger that's turbocharged, you can do that. You can go out and you can basically find anything GM makes with the V6, what they call this bolt pattern. Basically, it's a very standard bell housing bolt pattern. And as long as you can get either a standalone ECU for it or get it to work with the stock ECU, you got yourself a you know, car that'll run and drive and work well and, you know, run it through the transmission. I mean, you can take a lot of mid-engine or a lot of front-wheel drive cars, platforms, like the whole cradle, and drop it into the back of this thing, which is not an option that I'm ruling out. So if, like, the motor on this thing blows, it's very much an option I'm considering. So, you know, you can do whatever the hell you want with it. It's, and really when you turn around to go sell it, if it's not in concourse condition, like I said, you're not really going to have to worry about damaging the value. Because those things are, you know, unless it's, like I said, in absolute perfect condition, you're not really damaging the value by modifying it. So there's that aspect of it. There's also the aspect that I said, you can do what you want with it. You don't have to worry about it. There's endless options, endless possibilities with it. The biggest drawback to that, I'm trying to think, like, why would that ever be a drawback to anything like that? Would be maybe, you know, it does kind of diminish the value of the vehicle as a product. Because there are so many modified examples out there of it. And again, if you just want a modified car, you don't care, you just want something that is good, which is exactly what you want. You can't really get much better than this. So you modify a Toyota MR2, and you're going to get shit from that. You're not going to get shit from modifying a Ferrari. You know, this is a community base that, you know, well, first of all, it's part of my own. I'm sure there's, take a look at the Facebook group and see if there's anything out there for that. But, you know, they don't care, as far as I can tell. I, you know, post, you know, the YouTube stuff and, like, hey, Fiero modified, blah, blah, blah. And you don't get shit for it. You just get, like, oh, I have a Fiero, I modified it, and I did X, Y, or Z, or I put an engine swap into it, or I did this, that, and the other. It's kind of this wonderful embracing of personalization of cars that you really don't get with other cars, you know. Even if you modify a V6 Camaro and you try and make it look like something it's not, you get shit for it. And yeah, you get, the Fiero as a whole gets shit for a, you know, poor man's Ferrari or Lamborghini or whatever. But really, when it comes to that at the end of the day, is it a bad comparison to make? Not terribly. You know, I'd rather be the poor man's Ferrari than, you know, not even the Allgate. You know, it's got clever little things to it, too. Like, it's got
what I'm installing right now, which is like a little base for the windshield or for the sunroof to live, which I think is such a cool little feature. And like one of my friends was like, well, you know, I like the MR2 because it's got like a cool, or not the MR2, he liked the, what the hell is that? The Del Sol, because it had the little place for the T-top to go in the back. And this is very much along the same idea, where it's where it's a little point up front where you just throw in the sunroof and it just kind of moves there, which is super cool in my mind. I just think it's a car that really, when you think about the, you know, specifically the, like, opposite lock community and the, Jalopnik community, the drive, this kind of, like, new era of kind of embracing the uniqueness of cars, it's very much a car that you can make into your own entity and not feel bad about modifying it, like you're losing something or like the car is missing a part of its soul, because these cars have been endlessly modified. They've been endlessly tweaked and tuned and engineered, so much so that it's hard to find sometimes examples of these cars with the original motor in it. But like the other stuff they shove into these things works just fine in there. And like there's a Chevy 3800 fits back there perfectly fine. It works with the stock ECU, and you add 50 horsepower right off the bat with that. So, you know, there's those aspects of this car that make it very desirable, in my opinion. And, you know, I really can't think of another automobile out there that kind of embraces all those things. So, again, it's mid-engine, rear-wheel drive. It's fun. It's got manual steering. I'm actually thinking about going into a junkyard nearby, grabbing two doors with the manual windows and the manual mirrors, just for, I want everything in a car that can be manual to be manual. I've been told by some people I'm crazy, but I think that's a cool idea, and I think it's, you know, I want my daughter to understand the winding window motion that drivers do, because, you know, maybe that'll go away, maybe it won't, but it's just such a interesting vehicle. It's less than $1,000. These things, they're still prolific out on the used market. I think they're very much, if you're thinking about, I want to do a project, I want to get in something fun, I think you should do yourself a favor and go out and buy one. I'm not an investor, it's not an investment device, but you know, I think there's nowhere for these cars to go but up. You know, I hope you all like my legal disclaimer there. I don't think there's anywhere really for these cars to go but up. And, you know, finding a good example is not hard. You can get all sorts of modifications for the suspension, for the, different tires, different engines, different interiors. I mean, it runs the gambit. You can get a different body for it if you want a different body. You can do whatever the hell you want for this car. And when you show up, people will still go, oh, it's a Fiera. Or it's, you know, that's Ike's car. Or that's, you know, Greg's car or Donnie's car or whatever. And it's fun to have that kind of freedom to be able to do stuff. And, you know, like I said, as these cars get older and kind of get further from the old, like, well, why were they bad? Like, well, yeah, the first year they caught fire. But the V6s never had that issue. That was always an inline four issue, and that was the first year they made them, and all of those got recalled and everything on them. So there's that aspect of it. And then when you get into, you know, it's a fun car. It's not a lot to break up. Like I said, manual rack, engine's in the rear, but it's basically a front-wheel drive setup. So if you work on a front-wheel drive car, you can work on this car. I think the, like, biggest pain in the ass in this car is the clutch replacement. I think you have to basically drop most of the motor out of it to do that, which a lot of cars, you wouldn't have to do that. So there are some small compromises.
But, you know, if you're... This thing, and again, I'm 6'2", and I don't have the seat all the way back in this thing. Because, well, A, because I need a little bit more force to get to the clutch to operate fully, because it is a strong clutch. But I think it's a good car for, you know, tall people. It's great on the highway from what I hear. I got to get it fully working before I trust myself taking it out on the highway. But, you know, it's, again, it's not a bad car in any criteria beyond kind of the stigma that really is gone away from this from about the year. So that's kind of my piece on that. So the next episode, we'll kind of get into why I got rid of the Volvo and, you know, what happened with all that. So we'll get to that, and then hopefully a little bit later we'll talk about the recent road trip I went on. So if you like what you hear, you know, make sure you tell a friend, loved one, coworker, whoever. You know, give us a like on the iTunes or on the YouTubes or however the hell you watch this. You know, I just appreciate you listening to my words. So if you want to tell a friend, that's the best way to help out the show. Yeah, and follow me on all social media at Untitled Car Show. I'm most active on Twitter. So if you're a big Twitter person, follow me on there. So thanks everyone so much for listening, and have a good day, a good night, a good evening, wherever you are, whatever time it is there. Thank you so much for listening. Please be safe out there.